Good morning, listeners. You are on the air with Biz Culture Matters. I'm Zach Gandra. This is Steve Gandra. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Listeners, you'll be happy to know that it's great that we are recording this show before you're listening to it, because we just committed a huge technical glitch and had to start over again.
Technical glitch, which the listeners would have never known about, except that you just brought that. Way to model that business culture transparency.
Transparency,
Steve,
is what this show is all
That's
about.
That's right. We're trying to be as transparent as possible as we can. It is close to Christmas. Steve, how are you doing on your Christmas shopping?
Not good enough. Not good enough, but my wife will make sure that I catch up soon.
Yeah, I think that you're going to get my patented Amazon gift card this year. How you feel about that?
I love Amazon gift cards. I read, and when you can just click and you don't have to pay and put your credit card information in, that's a joy.
You know, that's who we should have on the show. We have one of our partners, right, that's an old Amazon executive.
Yeah, we need to have Daniel on the show. He would do great.
That would be a great show. I have a couple of friends that work at Amazon, too, and I don't live too far from their headquarters, so that would be an interesting show. They're a big, big company doing a lot of things right now.
Yeah, great place. We have an awesome guest today. I'm so excited about Tom Webb, who I have known for a good bit. You know, just a safety giant, knows about safety culture, brilliant guy. The only thing we don't like about him was we just found out in the pre-show banter that he used to be a lawyer, but he redeemed himself by telling us that he's recovering.
New England Law School. How about that, Tom?
Excellent. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. We're glad you're a recovering lawyer and not a current lawyer. Can we say that?
I'm still in that 12-step program.
You are an East Coast guy. You went to school at Salem State University and the New England School of Law in Boston, Massachusetts. Does that mean you're a Red Sox fan, too?
Yeah, absolutely. Even this year, still a fan. But,
incredible. Being from Seattle, I'm a Mariner fan, but I'm also a Red Sox fan because it's anybody but the Yankees.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, we're glad to have you on. Steve's got some incredible questions. I, in particular, am excited that you, some past organizations that you held positions at, New York City Transit, Vice President, former Director of Labor Relations, Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, Director of Human Resources, Labor Relations and Workers' Compensation at MBTA Boston. Excited to hear some past successes, failures, current things that you are doing. But I've driven on the road with Steve, so anybody we can get to help coach him in transit safety, I'm excited to have on the show.
Yeah, my wife is going to be really happy that you're coaching me on improving my safety. You know, we have a lot of adopted kids, and our family vehicle, when everyone won't fit in the Lexus, is a, you know, revitalized, refurbished 15-passenger Chevy van. And Zach and I had the opportunity to drive it today, just the two of us, and he says I'm a terrible driver.
That's a scary driver. One of the kids calls it the brown turd. Yeah, can we say that on the radio? Can we say, we don't have to beep out turd. It doesn't look like a turd. It's a fancy old Chevy van. But
well, it could work with you, Steve.
Yeah. Thank you. So, Tom, give us some background on, you've done so much with transit authorities just all over the place, and your work has saved so many lives. Tell us about your background, and listeners love to hear this kind of stuff.
Oh, all right. Well, I started unexpectedly, or I wasn't intending for a career in transit, but I came out of the service and I got a job driving a bus while I was going to college, and started in the career advancement side on the bus operations side of transportation. Took a little bit of a turn and decided to go to law school, and started dealing with the transit companies and representing the transit companies and dealing with the labor unions. I'd come out of labor unions before I went to law school, so I started doing labor relations. And in transit, it's a pretty volatile environment, and it's also a very tight network. So I worked with the Boston Transportation, the MBTA in Boston, for 20 years and left there and went down to Philadelphia for 3 years. And after that, I decided to go consulting. And it really was interesting that from the transit industry, I learned an awful lot of things that are transferable, because I started working with clients in the nuclear power industry and the utilities and manufacturing and then healthcare. But I keep getting drawn back into transit, because I guess that's where I came from. So it was developmental for me. It provided the opportunity for me to get a good background in operations environment to understand business. Gave me the opportunity to learn a lot about the human resource side of the business as well as the operations side, and the labor relations stuff is something that really moved me into the whole realm of culture, because as a traditional labor relations advocate, you know, I learned early on that just the labor relations between labor management, the traditional model, just it doesn't work. You know, it's not sustainable. And I started getting involved with culture, trying to change the culture and trying to influence the environment through culture change, and just from a series of programs, and started appreciating that there's a much greater achievement when the parties are able to understand that, centered around some fundamental values and principles that the parties can agree on, you can accomplish a whole lot more. And in doing that, when I've gone out and consulted in other industries, you know, it's turned out that being able to impress a number of CEOs and a number of board members that the value of that model is, you know, given me a chance to work as a coach, if you will, with some of them, and then work in their organizations to support management groups.
Yeah, one of the great things I like about your background, Tom, is that you've had the opportunity to kind of work on both sides of the labor management, you know, conundrum, for lack of a better way to describe it, and you know and can see things from a worker's point of view and from a manager's point of view and from a leader and a consultant's point of view, so where you have to look at both pieces of the puzzle. And so much of our world today in organizations is actually slowed down by conflicts that are going on between labor and management that go all the way back to, you know, Henry Ford and the United Auto Workers many years ago. And Tom, you know, you're an expert in fixing those things and getting folks on the same page and helping us all work towards a win-win that saves lives.
Well, it's really very rewarding when you can. And the way I kind of moved into safety was I was trying to find common ground, the areas where you can bring the parties together and actually let down some of their defenses and try and work outside of their traditional approaches to conflict. And safety is something that was a safe area for labor unions because they support that concept. And for, you know, the management, it's imperative. The safer the environment that you have, and it's proven, the more productive and efficient, and we do a lot of public sector work. My group is Western Corporate Consultants. We do a lot of public sector work with the transit properties, but the private sector clients as well appreciate that working on safety is a really effective team-building effort within an organization. It's a trust-building effort, and it affects your production, and it affects your bottom line, which is, you know, what you're doing for your customer and your shareholders.
Yeah, well, one of the things that you know that I love about what you have shared with us before, Tom, is your perspective on the fact that it's all about culture. And if you're looking to improve safety as well as performance or cost savings or profitability, and you don't have your eye on the culture ball, then you're probably going to strike out in the long term for sure, if not necessarily in the short term. So we're going to take a short break. But when we get back, we want you to tell us some background about how you discovered that it's all about culture.
Sure, I'd be glad to.
All right, we're taking a break, and we'll be right back with Biz Culture Matters. Tom Webb on the phone from the East Coast, and we'll be back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And you are back. We're back from the commercial break. Biz Culture Matters here. We're on the phone with Tom Webb over from Western Culture Consultants. Steve, lead back into that great question you had just asked.
So, Tom, give us the skinny on your discovery of how does safety and culture and performance, you know, even relate? Because usually culture is the warm and fuzzy, squishy stuff that nobody pays attention to unless there's a whole lot of time and a whole lot of money left laying around to, you know, do something with that you can't find other things to do with. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, that's an interesting position because a lot of people begin to think that way if they just are talking about it for the first time. But I'd like to add to that that they also decide that they're going to think about it when they come up with an incredible disaster like the Exxon Valdez or the Three Mile Island or the oil spill that occurred down in the Gulf recently. You know, when you have those kinds of catastrophic effects that take lives and end up destroying environments, people start looking at what's wrong. You know, why are these things happening? And they've discovered that it's not just about safety; it's about having a culture, and that's what's missing is that having a culture of safety. And you know, I'll start with I had the good fortune of being asked to support New York City Transit, which, while I'm a Boston guy, my clients are all over the country, and participated in that Boston-New York rivalry, I've always admired New York City Transit because of all the transit properties I've represented around the country. They are the largest, and they're just a different universe than the other transit properties. Their size is amazing. Their complexity is amazing. So when I was asked to come in there and work with them as the Vice President for Workforce Development, it was an opportunity to try and come in and try and influence culture within that organization. And it had a very contentious labor environment there for many years, and there was a new president who had taken over, a fellow named Howard Roberts, who was just a dynamic guy in the transit industry. In his first month on the job, he had two track workers killed. In fact, the first track worker was killed by a train while he was working on the tracks, and within several days, Howard was actually going to the funeral for the first track worker, he got a phone call to the second track worker. Had been killed. And as a result, he reached out to the union president, Roger Toussaint, and he sat down with him and he told him that this is a point where he'd just come in new, the union wasn't very trusting of the organization or this new president. Sat down with him and he said, look, we need to do something about this. We can't have any of our people killed, and we need to do something about the environment. We need to explore why is it happening. And both of them together started looking at their safety programs and started working on it together. And the amazing thing that happened from the beta and the information that they were receiving was that they had a lot of great safety programs and they had a safety culture. They had rules and adherence. But what surfaced from the people that were supporting them is there was a failure from a lack of culture. in that you could have rule compliance and people would obey the rules when they're required to obey the rules. But a difference in a simple term is a culture is values that are ingrained and people will act on those values, and it's what they do when no one's watching. And they found out from that that was missing, that the culture was missing, and that contributed to the deaths that had occurred and the number of safety accidents.
Yeah, right? What a great quote. That one's going out on Twitter, Tom. You know, culture is what they do when no one's watching. When we had a chance to chat before and we interviewed you for your blog article, which listeners you'll find at excellentcultures.com on the culture news, in the culture news section, Tom shared with us that his opinion is that traditional labor relations doesn't work, that it's broken. Tell us why you feel that way, Tom.
Well, you can see it right now with the number of strikes that are going on. I mean, one of our favorite products that we all grew up on, Twinkies, has gone the way of a lost American icon. I mean, that has gone under because of a lot of reasons, but a large contributor is the conflict between labor and management, which they can't settle right here where I'm at now in California.
You mean we can't get any Twinkies?
I don't know what to do.
What are we going to do without Twinkies?
It's bad news, but fortunately, in fact, after they announced they're going out of business, you couldn't find one in the stores. People were buying them as novelty items and saving them, but it appears that there's about 100 bidders to buy the company, and Hostess will be manufactured under a different name.
Oh, great. That's great. I mean, I got to have my Twinkies.
I was going to try to figure out how I get that recipe, right, and be the only one making them.
Okay, so we distracted you, Tom. Get back and let's talk about business again.
But that's examples of businesses that are unable to function because of the dysfunctionality between the labor and management. And it's about making healthy businesses. It's about having employees who are engaged and committed. And it's about having a trusting environment. And because of the conflict that occurs between labor and management, they're seldom able to establish the kind of trust that you really need in a culture-based organization.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've negotiated over 100 contracts all over the country. And, you know, I'm sorry to say that when you settle a contract, it doesn't settle the issues. You know, after the first check is cashed, you know, you're still left in the organization. The employees and the management are left with the same issues that they had in the union as well. So, you know, how do you get behind that so that you have an enduring, viable, healthy organization? If you don't have a culture that you can rely on, and if you can't build, if you don't build that culture, and you're not going to have that ability to improve or sustain.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting in the work that we've done with labor management organizations, both on the management side and on the employee side at Excellent Cultures, where it's so difficult to get both sides to agree on contracts or on benefits or on all of the things that, you know, labor and management traditionally have conflicts over. Anytime we've asked both, you know, the labor leaders and the management leaders to identify the culture that they want to leave to their children as a legacy, the feedback, both through the data profiles that we use to measure culture and just confidential verbal interviews, are almost identical. I mean, why is that, Tom? Why can we agree on culture, but we can't agree on anything else?
Well, you can agree on it, but the question is, can you engage, participate, and to implement that culture?
There you go.
You know, and what I like to do is I try and give people examples by looking at Southwest Airlines and comparing them. You know, why is it? And I ask a question often when I'm meeting with groups or presenting, and, you know, name a company that has for 30 consecutive years topped returns on the New York Stock Exchange. And, you know, I get all kinds of names. You know, I get GE and Alcoa and all these other companies, but nobody stops to think when I tell them Southwest Airlines.
And wow.
People say, well, why Southwest? You have to look at it. You have to understand. All the other airlines are, like, losing money. They can't, they all went into bankruptcy. They all had to rely on the federal funding. And here Southwest didn't. What's the difference? I mean, they have the same problems. I mean, they said, They have as many labor unions as everybody else. They had the same fuel costs. They had the same issues about terrorism that were associated with that. They had the same issues with weather, and they had the same issues with customers. So why is it there's one airline that's able to be successful, and it's now growing to be the largest domestic carrier? It's because it developed around a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Developed around a culture of trust, transparency, and honesty. Mm-hmm. And as it grew, it maintained that culture. As the labor unions came in and they worked with different issues, they understood that they could trust the commitment that was made, and they became problem solvers. Sure, they had their conflicts, sure, they've had their problems, but they're able to resolve those conflicts and resolve the problems because you have that culture. And
so,
when you look at their performance, their productivity is just significantly higher than any other airline.
Yeah, it sure is. So, Tom, are you saying that the reason that traditional labor relations doesn't work is because of culture, and that traditional labor relations doesn't take culture into the mix in terms of identifying common ground in terms of where we want to go?
Well, lack of a healthy culture. You know, everybody has a culture, whether you like to admit it or not. You get a culture in the organization, you just kind of look around and you can identify it. But the labor management come from these traditional roles where they're supposed to be adversaries and that they're supposed to take hardened positions and they represent those positions the way they feel that they're supposed to do it. If you have a culture, as I pointed out in Southwest, where you have honesty, trust, respect, transparency, and you're operating in that, even though the parties are taking their respective positions and they're saying that we're advocating a particular position, but you're doing it within the basis of a culture, then you don't have that fear that exists in the other environments that prevents you from being able to problem solve.
Yeah. Yeah. So our subject matter, as you know, is about developing cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement, essentially from a safety culture context, which you're a worldwide expert on, Tom. With respect to this communication that you're giving us now, this concept of trust and honesty, and I mean, these are all values that everybody publishes on their website and everybody talks about, and every company that has been around for any length of time has integrity of one of their values, but that's not what we see lived in the media, or it's not what we see lived in the private forum, although it's in the public forum. How do you differentiate between the guys that are just advertising and the guys that are really doing it?
Well, and that's a good point, because you will find that everybody understands what the banner items are supposed to say, and they pay lip service to the verbiage. When you want to try and find out who really is walking the walk, you take a look at the organization, like I just did with Southwest, and say, okay, here's an organization in an industry, and you compare them to the other companies that are there, and they do well in good times and they do well in bad times. You know, why do they do well in bad times? Because they live by what they didn't lay off when they were out there in a
place,
like all the other airlines did. They said, no, we're going to retain our employees because we're investing in them.
Yeah.
Well, other companies all said, one of our values is people come first. And what happened? They were right. They were the first ones to be laid off.
People got laid off.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very, very true, Tom. Very true.
Southwest didn't do that. They said, no, we're going to find efficiencies in other areas, and people work to find those efficiencies as opposed to being advocates trying to hurt each other and try and protect their own respective patch. So, having a culture, and I think you may have overstated about being a worldwide safety expert. I really feel like with safety, while I've been involved in it for over 20 years, particularly through the transit industry, I feel like what's occurred over the last several years has been more significant because of the experiences in New York, but also I have the privilege right now of being part of a very outstanding team that's doing a two-year research project to try and create and define how you can create a safety culture in the transit industry.
Wow, we're going to love to see the results of that. We're about out of the time for the first portion of the show. We're going to go to a break shortly, but Tom, be thinking about as over the break, and what our listeners are going to want to hear when we get back is, you know, where have you seen these cultures of ethics and value start to deteriorate in organizations? What are some of the trouble signs that people should look for and pay attention to in the process?
Sure.
You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. Time for a break.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
Welcome back, listeners. It's almost Christmas time, and you've got a couple more shopping days left. But until then, keep listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM or excellentcultures.com. Our podcast will be going live soon. We're still on the line with Tom Webb. Tom, right before we exited for commercial break, you began to enter into a little bit of conversation of a team you're working on that's doing a two-year research project. Could you update us on that real quick?
Yeah, the purpose of the research was, there's been a series of very significant accidents in Boston and Washington, D.C., out here in California with the rail transportation. And it's prompted the Department of Transportation, the FTA, Federal Transportation Administration, to look at what's going on when we have an industry that is so focused, supposedly so focused on safety, and we're having such significant or catastrophic issues. But that is the way the whole aspect of safety culture actually emerged was through, you know, some significant nuclear power industry tragedies. And when they were examining those tragedies, and they were looking at the different aspects of what went wrong, what they found out was that it was a lack of culture, so that, you know, the rules were in place and the training was there, but the culture wasn't there. It wasn't internalized in the individual. So we're looking at that in the transit industry to try and provide, the difference between, I think, transit is very safety conscious, and they have a very high safety climate, which is attention to safety detail and rules and training and so forth. But there's a distinction between that application and actually having a culture where it is based on values as opposed to based on rules, and that those values are accepted by individuals, and that you have an open and a trusting environment. You have a situation where people are not afraid to report unsafe incidents, so that they're protecting their fellow worker, as well as hopefully advising people of potential problems that could be worked on to avoid serious accidents. You know, the transparency where people are being informed and this communication. But one of the other things that's very important is that, you know, it requires, from the top down, it requires that there's leadership that is fully committed and fully involved, and that everybody accepts responsibility and they're accountable. So this is something that we're looking at in transit, and we're looking at a number of the private sector companies, national companies and international companies that have achieved those kinds of successes and how they rely on a culture. We're looking at the transit industry, and they are participating by evaluating, we're evaluating with them, their safety environment, and are looking to see what the best practices are from the safety cultures and how that gets emerged. There's an intimate, a very interesting twist to this, though. You know, as I said, I came to culture first and the safety culture. We're doing the research, and the research is very intense. We're looking at all of the safety culture models that have been designed by researchers over the years, and they're very interesting. But one of the most important things that comes from safety culture models is the recognition that what is required for a safety culture model is for an organization to have a good culture. So you have to have the culture in the organization first, and then those cultures and those that culture and those values are applicable to your safety environment. Not only to your safety environment, some of the people that we've interviewed, different companies, have said, well, yeah, we've used it in safety and found out that it's so successful by transferring those values and having people accept in the safety arena, the culture of safety, that taking those things into other areas of production are areas that we're also making our values, you know, our leading indicators for how we do business. And so it just shows that it starts with, you know, culture, change, and alignment within an organization around good values, and then those are transferable to the other aspects of business. So it's a really interesting and enlightening effort, and I hope that we'll be providing a real good product for the transit industry. And the transit industry is very participatory and very excited about the effort.
So when's the study going to be published, Tom? Do we know yet?
Well, it's not due to be completed for at least another 6 months after the completion date. It gets handled through. It's from the Transportation Research Board, which is a part of the National Academy of Sciences, and they will take it for a while to make sure that they have the ability to publish it and to provide lessons from it, and then they will distribute it. So I think we're at least 6 to 8 months away.
So sometime in late 2013, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the question from out of left field that I know you have a great answer to.
Oh, yeah.
We see a lot of internet blabbing about great cultures and great values and great cultures and great values and great values and great cultures, and most of the literature is about, you know, entrepreneurial companies. We published a great article on our blog series at excellentcultures.com in the culture news section a few weeks ago that listeners, you're going to want to catch on Tony Hitch, the CEO of Zappos, the shoe company that has just set records for everything and has a phenomenal culture. And you have these entrepreneurial companies that are about hiring for values. You know, and what you hear said time and time again by all the experts is hire people with the values that you want, because if you don't, then you're going to get values that they already have, and you can't teach people values. But, Tom, we know that your experience is about working with companies with hundreds and thousands of employees. I mean, what do you do if you have a company with even 50 employees or hundreds or thousands of employees who have been there for years, and they've already got a culture, and now you want to come in with all these new values, and you know that just preaching values isn't going to change people's values, and you can't replace everybody? How do you deal with a problem like that?
And that's a good question, because that's what people try and say. They say, well, Southwest grew up with their values, you know, or these entrepreneurial people are coming in, and they're like bringing new people in. And, you know, it's difficult when you've got 50,000 employees and you want to blend it with new hires, and how do you change the culture internally? It's definitely doable if people are committed to doing it. And I'll give an example of, one of the clients that I had in the steel and titanium industry. They're the largest internationally now in steel and titanium industry, and for the aerospace industry. They're located in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, they were having a real difficult experience, been around for a long time, had a workforce that was disgruntled, and they were looking at, a lot of issues. But they had a CEO, who's now their chairman, a CEO who had a lot of heart and commitment, and you know, he really was not afraid to openly evaluate what's going on in the organization. And it was not a question of his deciding to say, okay, I'm going to, by edict, I'm going to identify some values that everybody's going to have to live by. He really did request that we do an evaluation of the organization and how people actually felt, where they actually stood, so that you're able to take a baseline and you're able to look at what you think you have for values, and you look at where the workforce at different levels really believes that the values in the organization are, or if there aren't any values. And when he got the information that was not very good, he said, okay, how do we do this? How do we change it? And through his commitment, and he was just amazing because of the amount of time that he actually spent, because he was able to provide commitment through his performance, his visibility, his availability in the workforce, of providing people with an understanding of the vision, what he needed to achieve, what he wanted to achieve, and solicited from people what common values were that people could actually rally around. And you know, he went from being the president of that division to now being the chairman of an international corporation that's in dozens of countries around the world. And that workforce is just doing a tremendous job because they understand how they're connected to the organization. They understand what their value is to the organization, how they contribute from their position. And they also, there's predictability. They know with predictability, because of trust and respect, they have an understanding of what can be expected and what will happen if there's an issue. So those kinds of things are what come from the values of a culture that lives by trust, honesty, inclusion, transparency. And when you have those, you need to be prepared to say that I want to reach out and really make sure I understand the people that I'm working with, and I want to make sure that we all understand the kind of culture that we can work under. And then you just realign. It's a real process, but you realign from where you're at to where your perfect world would be.
Yeah, very well said. And it sounds like he did that exceptionally well, Tom. So we're going to take another break in a second. But listeners, a critical point of information here is the how to build an excellent culture, how to build a culture of safety, of ethics, of values, of employee engagement. We've interviewed and worked with hundreds of companies at Excellent Cultures, and the process that we've been able to boil down to is four simple, structured, scalable steps. Make sure you visit the homepage at excellentcultures.com and take a look at the four-step process on the bottom half of the homepage and get into the detail, because these high-performance cultures that Tom is talking to you about, you know, it's interesting that there are common threads that run through them, and it's a very structured, scalable process that we can learn from. So after the break, Tom, we're going to ask you to be thinking about and talking to us about the whole ethics, values, and employee engagement process. I mean, Gallup tells us 71% of our employees in American companies are effectively disengaged in their jobs. We want to hear your opinion on how we can fix this, what companies can do, and what's the connection between ethics, values, and employee engagement.
You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back with Tom Webb and on Biz Culture Matters, Clay 1180. Steve, what a good question going back into disengagement of employees. Go ahead.
Yeah, 71% Gallup tells us, and this was last October, it wasn't too long ago, American employees effectively disengage in their jobs, basically people showing up to work, punching a clock, signing in, showing up, and in their hearts, they'd really rather be doing something else. Tom, what connection have you seen in all of your work and all the organizations you've been around in your life that connects ethics, values, and employee engagement? And how does someone go about affecting their engagement through their ethics and values?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people, you're right. If you look at that and think of the number of people that are disengaged, how much money do you think that they cost an organization? Or said differently, how much more money do you think that you would be able to produce and how more productive would you be if you had all those people effectively engaged? So, you know, when you start looking at that, first people have to look at, you know, what is, you know, the outcome? You know, why would I want to be involved in it? Why would I be considering this? Because it sounds touchy-feely. You need to translate it to the bottom line, which is what's the value to the business, what's the value to the customer, the shareholders. And that's what it's all about for having people engaged. And when they're disengaged, you're losing an awful lot of opportunity. We see that in the studies when we're looking at successful people who've gotten some really good recommendations on how to improve their process in an industry. It's coming from employees who are prepared to commit and care about the organization and understand their contribution to the organization. So lacking that engagement, you're lacking an awful lot of opportunities. But it's hard for a lot of managers, and it can be threatening because, you know, they have to look at it differently. It requires that, you know, you have to take a lot of introspection. You have to say, as leadership and management, you know, you have to be prepared to face your fears. You know, what I may hear things that I don't want to hear. I want to think that things are okay, you know, and you have to be prepared to face those fears and to receive that feedback. And in order to receive the feedback, you've got to go out and use methods that are going to actually get you some honest data. To respond to that data, you have to get that from your workforce, from your employees. You know, you need that true feedback. And the only way to do that is through surveys and focus groups. You know, you find out the truth in the organization.
So here's the question from out of left field, Tom.
Okay.
Again, the surveys are all over the place, and they're all good, and they all give us feedback that we wouldn't have if we didn't ask the confidential questions for employees to complete. But the, you know, traditional best companies surveys, employee engagement surveys, I know Gallup, one of Gallup's surveys has a question about do you have a best friend at work? And there are others. I mean, the ones that I've seen, like my manager communicates well with me, or I enjoy coming to work every day, or I have all the tools that I need to complete my job. Well, the tools that you need to complete your job is a pretty easy one to address. But typically what happens if, you know, if it's a question like, you know, my manager communicates well with me, or my manager and I communicate well, and you get a poor score, then the manager comes and looks at it and obviously wants to improve it and starts having dialogue with an employee around, well, why don't we have good communication? Now, if you have a defensive culture, you're going to have employees who are going to tell the manager what they think the manager wants to hear, not really what's going on in the communication. And so people nod their heads and smile and nothing changes. And next year you get a 2% improvement and you think you're improving when you could be getting a 200% improvement. You know, how do we get to the core of this stuff and make real change happen instead of just these warm and fuzzy surface level surveys?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. What it comes down to is you need some coaching. You need someone to be coaching you as the management team and the executive team. You need someone to be coaching you so that you're not getting defensive in your, because that's the first, you know, I talked about that issue in the client in Portland. I mean, here's a very competitive individual that is, you know, very forceful, and, you know, he didn't like to hear news that says that, you know, he may be pushing too hard in one area and not listening in another, but he also, fortunately, he was a really competitive athlete in college, and he responded very well to coaching. So he understood, as most of us should, that everybody needs a good coach. You know, the best people in the world have coaches. And if you're going to try and use this, you don't just, the other is, that's why I prefer focus groups to surveys. Surveys, you know, people, first you don't want to use a canned survey. You want to have it designed and crafted for the client. And if you can use focus groups, while it may cost a little bit more money, it's going to keep much better feedback because there's conversation and there's themes that you're going to get from focus groups that you won't get from a survey. So once you get that, then you need to have the assessment, not by the management, not because you're going to immediately have the defensive, because let's face it, people essentially are good. They're not bad people. They're not out to try and hurt people. But when they hear things like that, that's the way they're made to feel. So there needs to be someone who can translate and help people interpret the data that's coming from surveys and focus groups and develop a plan on what they can do next and work them through it. It's like changing any kind of a habit. You know, you need to have that new habit replace the old habit, or else you're going to fall back to the old habit, and that new habit needs to be reinforced. So those are the only, you know, you're just not going to do it by yourself with a canned survey.
Yeah, very well said, Tom. And I think what you're telling us is that when you have third-party coaches who are not part of the culture, people will tell the third-party coach different things under the bridge of, you know, anonymity or safety from repercussion than they would maybe talk to their boss about or even put in a suggestion box. And they will also tell an anonymous survey things that they wouldn't maybe talk to the boss about. But if the questions that you're asking in the survey are about surface level issues and they don't get to the why question, then we could end up with good data, but not necessarily any meaningful change. The analogy I like to use a lot, that I was speaking to a class of university seniors in the business curriculum not too long ago here locally at the University of Washington, and the question was about building a culture that both was successful and did social good in the marketplace. And I made the statement that culture sunk the Titanic, and they were all asleep until I asked, well, you know, what sunk the Titanic? And everybody said the iceberg. And when I responded with, what do you mean and why? It took quite a bit of time to actually get to the place where one bright young guy had done his research and realized that it was basically the mindset of the leadership of that boat around, this is the greatest boat that it's ever lived. It's bulletproof. It's the thickest hull. Nothing ever is going to happen. And it was that mindset that caused the errors that took place that ultimately sunk the Titanic. And all of a sudden, why became their favorite question. And it's almost like what leaders need to learn to ask and to get others to ask is the why behind the why question. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, it's interesting. You know, I think in the podcast I gave the example of Alcoa several years ago. A fellow named O'Neill came in, and people may remember him. He was the head of OMB, and then he was the treasurer under one of the Democratic presidents. When he took over Alcoa, his initial discussion to his shareholders was not the traditional discussion about stock values and business, but about making it the safest environment in the world. And he started talking about safety, and people were like, wow, we hired the wrong guy. This guy just doesn't understand it. But he went out and he used that as what's called a keystone habit. He said, we're going to change this environment because we have an environment here where it's very dangerous because of the products and stuff that we produce. So what we're going to do is we're going to work on safety. We're going to create an environment where people are going to be focused on safety. They're going to be able to come forward and feel that it's safe to be able to tell us when there's a problem and not feel like they're going to suffer the punishment if they're involved in something. So he started that, and he made that across the organization, you know, and he went out and he spoke to everybody about it. He made every one of his managers. I mean, he made that. This was going to be our guiding single most important initiative that we're going to have for the next fiscal year. And everybody was going to get on board or they were going to be gone. So his management team didn't quite know how to accept this. They go, you know, this is not traditional. And he said, we're going to make it safe and people are going to feel better. Well, when the employees started seeing that and they were being involved and engaged in how they make their environment safer, then they were feeling much better and they were offering many more suggestions. But they also understood that it became a safe environment because they could speak up without fear of retaliation. So now it became a safe environment, and there was an element of truthfulness and security based on what the CEO had said. In fact, it was so dramatic that he made everybody accountable for safety, from himself to the bottom line person to the newest entry-level person.
Wow. Now, what a great example. So we've got about 2.5 minutes left, Tom. What advice, as we close up the show, what advice can you give to today's businesses and corporations to establish and restore true cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement as the foundation for workplace safety? What can you tell them to do?
Well, I think the first thing to do is just step back, just assess, you know, do some introspection. You know, really take a look at what they're dealing with and where they'd like to be. And then do the outreach for employees to get feedback from the employees. Because remember, this is all around how you improve your environment. And if you improve your bottom line. And by improving the environment, you're going to get people engaged and you're going to be focusing on the bottom line. And also, that's going to give you the platform that you need to have people agree on your values and accept your values. And then you have the opportunity to assemble, you know, a group of champions through the organization, vertically and horizontally, so that you have people within that organization that are driving and reminding and communicating and making sure that, you know, those things are staying very visible. And then if you can find a keystone habit to work on around those, you've got, you know, some really good steps to align your organization where you want to go or establish the culture that you want. But I guarantee that it'll produce the corporate results that you're expected to produce.
Yeah, that's so great, Tom. So, listeners, Tom Webb, world-renowned safety culture expert, giving us tremendous tips. Make sure you download the podcast at excellentcultures.com on the Biz Culture Matters page. Share this insight and this wisdom with your people and your leaders on both the labor and the management side. Ask us questions. If you have a question for Tom, click the Ask the Experts link and ask us questions, and we'll make sure that Tom is responsive and gets back to you in a timely fashion. Tom, thank you so much for being on our show. Thank you for your great advice. You're a cool guy, and we really love the way you help the good guys win.
Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. And to you and all your listeners, have a wonderful Christmas.
You do the same, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. This has been Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. Remember, listeners, you can catch these podcasts on excellentcultures.com. Follow our Twitter stream at @XLNTCultures. Facebook.com/excellentcultures. Get our daily culture email. You can sign up right there on our website. Excuse me. Signing off with our wonderful quote from General Colin Powell. Great leaders are almost always great simplifiers who can cut through argument, debate, and doubt to offer a solution everybody can understand. Have a great and Merry Christmas. Signing off for now. See you next Saturday at 7 a.m. on Clay 1180 for Biz Culture Matters.